This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to episode 299 of the Countdown Podcast. Merry Christmas, or is it Happy Holidays now? Interfaith best wishes. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast of Countdown Movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. And today is a fan favorite, the last one for the year.
Indeed.
Top 10, last 10 time.
That's right.
This is where we review 10 of the last 10 films that we have seen and rank them from worst through to best. So you get basically somewhere between, depends if we've had any crossovers, but 16 to 20 mini reviews for things to watch during this holiday season for your entertainment.
Ideas and warnings. That's what I think.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, here you go.
Suggestions and warnings. Maybe to slightly amend that particular one. And believe me, I have some warnings this particular week. It is the last episode before our 300th, the big celebration thereof. 300 countdowns next week, which will be the last episode that we drop. In fact, it'll be the first episode we drop for the year. Last one we record. It will be the last one for the year. And then what will kick off 2021 will be the best and worst of 2020. As you can imagine, the worst will be much easier to do. And Wayne, that's all I've got as a preamble.
All good.
Anything else from you? All right, in that case, let's get straight into it then with a segment that we call The Recount.
Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount?
What's happening out there, Paul?
Well, look, straight into the point this week, and it's a short recount because, generally speaking, the top 10 last 10 episodes run a little bit longer, but this was from a random person on Twitter named Marissa who said, listening to the Countdown Podcast today and laughing so much.
Oh, really?
Just thought that's... I want to share that with you.
An organic, like, isn't it fantastic?
Well, if that's a bot, well played.
No, I don't know Marissa. I've never heard of Marissa, but yes, I hope she joins the community.
Yes, thank you, Marissa, so much for that. We really, truly do appreciate it. And then the result. Look, it's all moot by now. Wayne has flogged me on the 2020 year. So last week's show, the top 10 hilariously unthreatening, or as I've learned since, non-threatening is the correct English word, villains. Wayne is so far ahead, he cannot be beaten, I should add. But anyway...
Did I win this one?
No, God, no.
Oh, okay.
In fact, neither did I technically, but I will take the win between you and I. You got 13 votes for your list. I had 19 for mine, and there were 51 votes because I left the votes open.
Yeah, that's why there's so few votes.
Give us Reap, you cowards.
Yep.
From Nicholas Haskins from...
I think I got 51 votes.
Kitchen. Look, if you haven't worked this out by now, we refer to Reap quite frequently because we know you love it. The teasing, that is.
Absolutely.
And I know you've got blue balls, or lady equivalents thereof, blue ovaries. And the reality is, until the show ends, that's not going anywhere. So you can stop asking.
No. Here's the thing. Right? For anyone who doesn't know, Reap is a movie me and Paul made a while ago. We keep referencing
it. A while ago, 20 some years ago.
It was a shit movie. It was on fucking like Super VHS.
It was.
It's unwatchably shit. And I said on the thing, I said, listen, if you got, because the actual trailer is out, people. It's actually available,
right? They're on YouTube.
If you Google,
if you really watch that?
The Countdown, what are we, it's on our Countdown webpage, but.
Type in the Countdown Movie TV Reviews on YouTube and you'll find it.
Yeah. And Reap trailer, I guess, R-E-A-P. Anyway, it's there. I might post it just to see, but it's fucking terrible, guys. And
the trailer's not.
The trailer's fucking shit, too.
The documentary about the making it was pretty good too.
That was better than both things, but yeah. All right, well look, maybe I'll post it on the Facebook page and we'll just see.
Here's some of the feedback. Aforementioned Nicholas Haskins from Nikolai's Kitchen said, Paul and Wayne, we've admitted characters that are meant to be over the top or funny. Also, Paul and Wayne both put Sam Jackson and Kingsman on this list.
Something of a point, I must say, but...
But it's a film itself. The film's funny, but it's not meant to be a comedy. Yes. And he's meant to be threatening. He's meant to have...
That's right. Yeah, he needed to support the
bad part. In my opinion, sorry then, Nick. That's all I'm saying. And then there was a big discussion that went on, which I'm just going to scroll through. Daniel Lowe said, Boba Fett is a great call. And then, unfortunately, Wayne, you killed the man.
I didn't kill him, all right? To quote Shaggy.
How dare you, sir?
It was. I happened to pick Boba Fett this week, and then the fellow who played Boba Fett, Jeremy Bullock, unfortunately passed away, and he played it. And it's bad coincidence, people. Okay, I stand by.
Yeah, bad coincidence or tactical hit. You decide.
So this would mean that you somehow engineered this to make me look bad.
Let's see here. Cameron Petty, Paul, you should have made it double points at the end of the year. I think this was an easy win for you. Boba Fett was too minor a character, and James Earl Jones' Thulsa Doom was incredibly scary and intimidating villain and shouldn't be anywhere near this list.
You didn't see his hair there, Doug?
Matt Rochelle, again, referenced the Reap controversy, saying, if you didn't want us to see Reap, you wouldn't bloody mention it every episode.
It seems sound.
Smiley Smiley said, Reap us, you bastards! Smiley, the chances of you seeing Reap are even less than everybody else, because we know you. So, there you go.
All right, I'll post the fucking trailer. Let's just see what happens.
Yeah, well, it's already up there.
I'll post it on the Facebook page.
And lastly... Sam Hurley, our good mate from Movie Reviews and 20Q's podcast over in New Zealand, said, serious talk, Wainaruzu, what would it take to convince you to say yes to Reap's release? Do I need to buy some duct tape and Vaseline?
Once you see the trailer, you're going to go,
yeah,
I'm
the trailer, I'm sure.
I don't know, man.
Our long-term listeners have seen the trailer.
It was not widely promoted. Anyway.
All right, look, one other thing just to wrap it up. This link's going to be in the show notes, and this is a bit of sad news, and don't want to bring the episode too far down, but our mate from the Epic Film Guys,
Justin,
his dog. He's very, very ill. He's new. I don't know if it's a puppy. It looks very small.
It is a young dog.
Gus. And it's not something he's asked us to do. In fact, the result of this came from Dina Marie from the Twisted Philly podcast.
Twisted Philly podcast, yep.
She's put together a GoFundMe for some complex operations going to be required to keep Gus alive through this holiday period.
Mm-hmm.
If you would all have a few extra dollars, head over to the links in the show notes, post a few dollars towards the Justin's Family Way, and maybe we can make a difference in saving Gus for a family in this shitty, shitty fucking year.
That's right. Take something good out of it. It'll feel good to be good.
Yeah. And thank you to Dina Marie for putting this all together.
Thanks, Dina.
All right, that's it. That's the end of the Maudlin shit. Actually, no, it's not, because on the other side of this music cue, what you're going to hear is some real Maudlin shit until we get to the good shit as part of the top 10 and the last 10. Bye bye 2020 edition.
I imagine that'll fade out eventually.
Haunting. I think. All right, it's pretty straightforward. We count down the 10 films that we've seen pretty close to the last, and we go from worst to best, and we'll mark the point where we recommend you should bother with your time.
Absolutely.
I think it's my turn to go first this week. And my number 10. We briefly spoke about as potential for a main review.
This is usually the most fun part where we just shit on things. Oh God.
Directed by first-time director Josh Duhamel.
Duhamel. Yeah. Yep.
The dude from fucking Vegas. And the first Transformers movie. How to Win a Date with
Ted Hamilton and that guy, yeah.
Yeah, it's called Buddy Games.
It's on my list. Holy shit. Go on, please. This is your worst one, mate.
Please don't tell me it's high on your list.
It's not. It's like 8.
Okay, that's not so bad then. This is... Okay, it's basically a story. Apparently, it's based on a true story about Josh and his mates. They actually do these buddy games. It's a real thing.
Oh, my God.
He starts to make it into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's your problem.
Okay, tell us what it's about first.
So, basically, he and his mates get together and do this series of ridiculous challenges to crown...
Physical jackass-like challenges.
Yeah, crown a, like, you know, so we play paintball and we see who can shoot each other.
Someone's
crowned the king. It's just a... It's a like a trophy thing. It's not... Initially, at least, for money or anything like that.
Now, do you remember, Paul? Mm-hmm. You and I used to do this. Remember golf? We had the Dunny Cup.
The Dunny Cup, yes.
All right, so we had a version of this, all right? So boys do this shit.
Yeah, not knocking the concept.
Yeah.
What I mock is the execution.
Absolutely. Agree completely.
One, A, this is meant to be a comedy.
Yep.
It is not funny almost ever. I chuckled twice.
Yeah.
In the entire 96, whatever the fuck it is, minutes. 90 minutes. Jeez, it felt longer than that.
Yeah.
This film is god awful.
Okay, so when I saw the trailer to the film, I got very excited. Because it seems that I love films. I like buddy films.
Whether we should do it as a main review.
Exactly. The best part of a rom-com is the chat between the dude and his best friend talking about women. So it's just like, you know, it's just like, I love that shit. I love camaraderie, okay? It's good. Anywho.
The... eagle-eared among you would have heard something there, and I wish to apologize
to all. Shut up, it's not that.
balls, eat them balls up. All right. So this movie here, when you look at the trailer for it, right, there's a scene where they're talking about one of their challenges. They're all in a nightclub, and it's like, okay, everyone has to get a woman's number, but can you do it before you shit your pants? And then everyone has to down a bottle of fucking laxatives, right? Now, shit jokes and dude jokes, hilarious.
Should be funny.
I was thinking that's going to be a great scene.
Pretty funny in Bridesmaids when it was just a shit joke.
Exactly. Shit jokes are great, okay? They turn up in this movie, and that scene's like, well, here we go. And for some reason, it wasn't funny.
Ironically, it's a wet fart.
Yes, it was a wet fart, a bit of splash. And now, also, how did they not make that funny? The problem with this movie is the execution. Yumal can't shoot comedy. I don't know what it is, right? So
I'll go more than that.
Yeah.
The characters are, maybe not universally, like, ironically, again, to use that word, Dax Shepard is probably the most likable of the bunch.
Yes.
Everybody else
is a cunt.
Is a raging cunt.
Yes. Now, this is a problem. Movie starts off with the proposed cunt who's shitting on everyone and teabagging his friend while he's asleep and shit, right?
Yep.
Now, and then there's a guy who's downtrodden, the one guy in the group that everyone picks on, right? He ostensibly shoots him in the balls, and then after that cold open, the previous asshole is now the most downtrodden guy, and
we're meant to care?
Yeah, and the downtrodden guy is now the biggest asshole, and everyone hates, and all of them are unlikable except Dax Shepard, and even then he's kind of a bitch. So yeah. It's like,
and Josh Duhamel, how do you say his name?
Duhamel, I think.
His character is this mega rich dude with this ultra hot babe.
Fucking Olivia Munn is the best thing about this movie, and it's not even one of the characters.
And she just disappears from the narrative for the entire second half of the film.
That's just to give him a foil of like, oh, I got to do something for my wife or something. God. And he's the winner guy who's rich and shit. So it's like he puts up 150K prize that everyone does, and some people are fucked up. Everyone wants the money. One guy is like supposed to be secret gay, and it's like he's obviously gay. Like, what's that? Like, why is that funny?
Aha! Very funny. He swallows a whole fucking
and he can like in a hot dog he can deep throat the hot dog and stuff, and it's like, what the fuck?
This film made me angry. It's a very good chance to be my worst 10 films of the
really
year.
That bad.
I watched it with this increasing sneer on my face. My fiance, I know I reference her a lot on the show because she's a good kind of every person, she doesn't give a shit about films in the way that we do.
Yeah.
She just went after 30 minutes, shut the fuck off. Shut it off. I'm done.
Yep.
You can watch this shit yourself. It's all about on the podcast.
You know, I actually had a moment in this film where I'm like, okay, well, let's see. You know, and then I was like, oh, 32 minutes in, this isn't good.
Yeah.
This isn't good.
I arrived there well before that point. But by 30 minutes, you're like, I'm feeling this runtime.
Well, the character in the movie who was initially the asshole with the balls on his face, that actor was in Veep, and he's really funny.
In Veep,
right?
He's not really funny in
this. Well, the thing is, he's playing like, he's supposed to, even in the flashback, he's supposed to be playing like a, I don't know, 30-something, 20-something.
Well, he's meant to be playing someone who's desirable.
He's got a hot wife, and I'm like, no, he's a fucking ugliest cunt ever. But I see why they cast him, because he is funny at being offensive, but this is the wrong role for him. He needs to be an authoritative cunt. This is like, he's just fucked.
Everything about this film is terrible.
It was actually really poorly conceived. And you think, this is the type of film I think that you and I might have made, sort of, if it wasn't this. It's just the broness of it would have been a theme.
The broness, like, sure. But I like to think that if we were to make this kind of film, if we were to do, I don't know, Consequence Poker the movie.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
It would actually be funny.
Yeah, you're right. We would have an actual... Yeah, you're right. We would create it funny.
And most importantly, and here's what it all boils down to, we would create characters that are at least partially redemptive or endearing.
Yes, you have to like all of us, right? That's the thing why Ocean's 11 works. You like them all. You know, it's good shit.
For example. Or even just if you like at least half of them. It's okay to have the assholes.
Yeah, you have one asshole, but like,
you know, and then maybe
everyone else you're
but you've got to be behind these people.
None of these guys have empathy. It's
the reason that Warrior works is you've got two characters that are, I mean, you disagree about one of them, but I think they're both very empathetic characters.
They're at the very least watchable. So that's how it works. Yeah.
This is an absolute train wreck of a film. It's a disaster. Do not waste your money. It's premium on demand, or at least it was. Fuck this piece of shit. The worst possible score imaginable.
Wow.
It's a half a star film.
Half a star. All right, that's bad. I didn't think it was as bad as that, but it was bad. So, all right, here we go. My number 10.
Yeah, what's worse than fucking buddy games? I'm fascinated.
Jiu-jitsu, my friend. That's what's worse.
Oh, actually, I would have him around the other way.
Oh, dude, come on. All right, everyone. Nicolas Cage, don't Tony Jaa, okay? This is a movie about...
Frank Grillo.
Frank Grillo. Flexing his seps. All right?
This film, don't get me wrong. This film is god-awful.
Oh, dude. This is what the movie's about, everyone, okay? Every 6 years, according to this movie, an ancient order of jiu-jitsu fighters joins forces to battle a vicious race of alien invaders. Now, the lead is Jake Barnes. He's a master jiu-jitsu cracker. And he refuses to face Brax, an alien creature that looks like shit. So basically, he has to fight them, and the future of humanity is in the balance. Along the way, Nicolas Cage was one of these people who actually is bred or whatever to fight the alien people and shit. And all I can say to you is that this movie is a piece of shit with the worst special effects, right? And immediately you notice how cheap looking it is. All the action, while ambitious, looks like it's shot on a GoPro.
I'll tell you, yeah, it does. But I'll tell you why this film's better than Buddy Games.
Do tell me why.
Right. For me.
Yeah.
Because of that ambition. Because there's a scene, a great scene in there, which, well, in concept, it's a great scene.
Fighting with...
Where the main character, it's fighting from the point of view.
Yeah, it's a point of view shot.
Yeah. And then it makes the weird decision to come out of the point of view and then go back into his point of view, which doesn't work at all.
It's third person, first person, third person, first. And it's like, okay, but I know, okay, I agree with
but
you.
That's why I say it's ambitious. The ambition to it.
Yeah.
But the story.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. If Buddy Games' story was bad, this is abysmal.
What is a.
It defies belief.
First of all, every American soldier is a martial arts expert. Just because, all right? And then, like, the transitions between... It's supposed to be like a comic. Is that a stylistic choice? That's what...
God, the fucking panel transitions. Oh.
That was really shit. And I was like, wow. And it's weird to me that you can... Because I reckon the one-shots he's doing are very ambitious, like
that's
I said.
So I'm saying, that's what elevates
but
it.
But they still look shitty, right? They somehow look amateur. Again, thanks for trying.
Yeah.
But it didn't work, all right? It's a blatant, broke-ass Predator ripoff.
Oh,
it is the worst version of that and a collection of repetitive overlong fight scene one-shots, which sounds like it should be good, but it was shit.
But even the way it's structured, even the fight scenes, the way they're structured. Okay, so maybe the moves themselves, maybe, are
competent. There were some skills going on. Right? There were some skills.
But it requires a lot of people to stand around doing nothing for a long period of time. Oh, and Frank Grillo is so awkwardly out of place in this film. Not because he can't fight, because I'm sure I've seen him. He's very competent physical action.
In Avengers,
His character, as a great example of how, of many, many characters in this film, does nothing. He stands around waiting to die, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. And he's an actual good... He's in Billions and stuff. He's actually a good actor. I know he's beefcake.
He's in The Gray. He's in Warrior. That's where I know him from. He's in Wheelman. Shout out to you, Dan, from the Never Since Will podcast. Look, it is terrible. It's so bad.
I'll tell you what, something like the characters are so bland. When Nicolas Cage comes in being Nicolas Cage, I was grateful. I'm like, at least Nicolas Cage has some character.
Even that revelation about who he is and how he is.
And you know what's so stupid about this? It's supposed to be like Predator so much that it's like, you know, the Predator has like, you have to have honor because it's jujitsu or whatever. It was fucking ridiculous that the aliens gave us jujitsu. That's what this movie's telling you, right? Fuck off, right? It's, but the alien has all this honor thing, but then he cheats like a motherfucker. He'll just shoot people who are unarmed and it makes no sense.
It's a piece of shit. Jujitsu, terrible, terrible film.
It's
good
just,
choice.
Yeah, just get drunk.
And you know. All right, well, we've got one worse film than Buddy Games still coming on your list, but my number 9 is the latest Liam Neeson thriller actioneer.
I like this movie!
No!
Is it Honest Thief?
Honest!
I liked it! It's on my list and it's higher up! This is fine! This is fine. All right, let's hear about it. Tell me what Honest Thief's about.
This film basically follows Liam Neeson's character, who's been a thief for 8 or 9 years, whatever, since he came out of Special Forces and he was a fucking demo expert and he uses those skills to rob banks.
Mm.
He never hurts anyone and he's always very, very careful how he goes about
it. Super professional.
He's methodical and they've never found him. And anyway, he finds love in the very first scene or two of the film with a chick from Grey's Anatomy.
Yep, she's a ranger, so that's why Paul doesn't like this. Go on.
Didn't help.
Of course that helped me, so yes.
I can't remember what her name is. Is it Catherine Walsh?
Some chick is her name.
No, it's not. No,
I believe it's some chick.
It's Kate Walsh.
It's the same thing.
Pretty fucking close, unlike you, you dickhead.
Same chick Walsh.
It also stars Jai Courtney, which immediately tells you this film's going to fucking suck.
As soon as I saw Jai, I'm like, this is going to tank. He's like Stephen Dorff, man.
Yeah. Anyway, so basically, he decides to go straight and come clean and give all the money back because he's not spent any of it.
That's right. He wants to make a deal for a reduced sentence.
Something along those lines. Contacts the FBI to do so. Robert Patrick and...
Jai Courtney?
Not Jai Courtney. What's his name? Jeffrey Donovan. Yep. Burn Notice. Take the call originally. Hand it over to Jai Courtney and some other random dude. And they investigate. It turns out that Jai Courtney's a bad egg and he convinces his mate to be a bad egg. Let's just kill these people and take their money.
Take the money.
That's it. That's the premise of the film.
That's fine. mean?
In 1984, there was a film called The Neverending Story, and the threat in The Neverending Story was called The Nothing. This film is exactly that. It is so nothing. There is not one remarkable thing about this film. It's the blandest piece of shit you could ever hope to see. I'm like, this film is nothing. That action scene was nothing. Liam Neeson's nothing. Kate Walsh is nothing. Fucking Jai Courtney. Well, he's a little worse than nothing, but still, nothing. This is the film that killed, not Narnia, whatever the fucking Neverending Story is called.
Totally disagree. Liam Neeson, still quite a charming fellow, turns up, meets the redhead, tries to fuck her immediately, succeeds, and then like...
So Wayne's like,
I stand resolute, motherfucker! No, but like, I bought that he was doing that, and I didn't mind him. I liked him as a character because he didn't hurt anyone, and he's like, whatever. I don't know how he didn't spend any of the $9 million over the years. That's a bit fucking weird, but never mind. Jai Courtney was like... Jai Courtney. He was just Jai Courtney, all right?
He was what? Shit.
He wasn't shit. He was just
he's not
like,
believable at all.
He's a bit sneery. Yeah, I don't know.
He's fucking awful.
I didn't mind that T-100 was in it and stuff like that. I like Burn Notice. So it's like, I remember actually feeling like the show, I kind of liked it as I was watching it. And I was like, no, this isn't bad. This isn't as good as Nonstop in terms of the Neeson
ones.
This is
the worst Liam Neeson.
No, the worst one is like Taken 3 or something, man.
Oh, no. I mean, original properties. Taken 3 is the worst. One of the worst films I've ever made.
Was it Walk Among My Flaps or whatever? What was it?
A Walk Among the Tombstones. I'd rather watch that.
Yeah, that was shit. So trust me. No, this is fine, man. This is fine.
What the hell? You've obviously watched a lot of shit.
I've watched a lot of shit, right? But this falls into familiar action tropes. Don't get me wrong. But the twist.
Action?
Action tropes. Action? I think there's action
there's
in
like
here.
There's like two fucking scenes.
It's a thriller, I guess.
It's a thriller.
It's a thriller of sorts.
A bad thriller.
I'm saying to you, it's an okay film over the holidays if you're curled up on the couch. It's that kind of film.
All of your arguments are like my asshole, man.
It's like a dick. It's not awesome or anything, right? In fact, it's like, it's on my list. It's right in the middle, okay, on my list. But I thought it was
your
good.
List is fucking
shit. I thought
shit.
It was fine. Oh, it's Telstra. It's fucking Telstra.
Sorry, Telstra is a
telco
deep,
that's over here.
Yeah, Telstra. pot of shite.
Pot of shite. It's a shit. It's Martin a company Malloy. That fucks everyone over. Yeah. So, sorry, but please, there you go.
I got nothing more to say. Absolute piece of shit. Nothing film, which I'm so glad I don't ever have to watch again. All right, you're number 9. Right. What's worse than Honest Thief?
All right,
and Buddy Games. Holy right. shit.
A movie called Songbird.
Oh, no.
Dude.
I just...
Are you fucking shitting me? I've watched it yet. All right. Well, check it out, right? This stars Archie from Rivervale. KJ Apa is his name. Okay. And also Craig Robinson. Demi Moore.
Bradley Whittaker.
And Peter Stormare and Alexandra Daddario. Now...
All right. That's why Wayne watched
that
it.
That is why I watched
makes
it.
Makes sense.
Now, everyone, Songbird is produced by our friend Michael Bay. All right? But it's not as bad as a Michael Bay film. In fact, it's quite competently made. But let me tell you what it's about. By 2024...
Competently made... Worse.
Well, he produced it. He didn't.
Buddy Games.
Yeah. I'll tell you why. Okay, so the movie is the first movie that I've seen that directly deals with COVID-19.
Yes, I've seen the trailer.
Yeah. So it's about, by 2024 in the movie, the virus has mutated into COVID-23 and the world is in its fourth pandemic year, and the United States, people are required to take temperature checks on their phone, and then they get, you know, fucking dudes come in and fucking bust down your door and take you to this camp to die if you've got the COVID, right? And so this movie is all about that, and... this bike courier guy. Some people are immune. Anyway, it's the problem with this thing is, first of all, I think it's a little gross to make this
too
movie.
Close to home.
Yeah, it's a little
too early.
People are still dying of this
too
thing.
Too tsunami.
A little too tsunami. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's that one thing that I was sitting there going, this is actually a bit uncomfortable. In WA, we're quite lucky here, but if you were in the middle of it all, this would be quite triggery and hard.
That part I agree with. Yeah. Like, can you derive? I mean, enjoyment's the wrong word, but can an effective film be made at this point in time? Is it like, you know, we had 9/11, obviously, at least there was a few years before United 93 and World Trade Center came out and those kind of films.
Yeah. Look, I'm not usually this guy. That's not the reason I hate it. I was watching it and I was going, this doesn't quite sing at all. This is like, there's some good-ish sort of action here and there. And to be honest with you, it's not shot poorly or anything, but the dialogue is shit. Like, I remember going, this is a bit weird. And it's hard for that kid to do anything with it, I guess. It is... a very caricature-y type characters, particularly Peter Stormare, is like this sort of grizzled kind of
chewing
prop.
Scenery.
Very chewing scenery. I remember just going, nah, I didn't like this. About halfway through, I was like, this is shit. This is crap.
All right.
But, you know, actually, you know what? And I guarantee you now that I've panned it, Paul's going to like it.
Can you please at least reverse it around? Sounds infinitely better than Buddy Games because it's more successful what it was trying to do.
I think I laughed. I laughed a few more times in Buddy Games.
Well, you weren't meant to laugh at Songbird, you monster.
No, sorry. By laughing a few more times, the enjoyment level was slightly higher.
Fuck that.
I was more like, I was less bored in Buddy Games. I was just disagreeing with it. How's that? It was. Right. I was more engaged. How's that? Please, your number.
You idiots voted this man to be the superior.
I think it makes complete sense. I don't know what this crack is talking about. Your number
8,
sir.
My number 8 is also fucking awful, but at least it's time. It's timely, you know. Yeah. So here's your chance. You haven't watched it. It's directed by Paul Feig.
Oh, okay.
Ghostbusters guy, the Bridesmaids guy. It's Last Christmas from Last Christmas, ironically. So this was my Christmas film.
It's called Last Christmas?
Yeah. What's directed by Amelia. Sorry, directed by Paul Feig. Stars Amelia Clarke.
Henry Golding?
Henry Golding.
Yep. I wanted to see. Wait, what are you? Oh, your woman's with me. You saw this one.
No, I chose it because I went, you know what? I'm hanging on to it for next Christmas.
I kind of wanted to watch this one.
And we watched it. Yep. And it's basically, literally, based on the music of Wham.
Sounds awesome. I love me some Wham, everyone. I don't give a fuck what anyone thinks. Word to Big
Bird. What is your major malfunction, Nuts?
Even George's like solo stuff is fantastic.
Look, I think that first George Michael album was pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah, that's
Faith,
right?
What was it called? Was it called Faith?
Faith was Faith.
But yeah. Faith was on it.
Yeah, that one.
Anyway, so where to start?
Where to start? Because this is Daenerys Targaryen and Crazy Rich Asian.
Yep.
And, you know, like, what was it that... What? Was it boring? Did you not like the humor?
Again,
was
it's
it
a not romantic funny? Comedy.
Right.
It's got the romance. I'll give it that.
Fair enough.
Not funny.
All right, let me
it's
ask
written,
you.
Co-written by Emma Thompson.
Oh, well, that
who
should
plays
be fine.
Amelia Clarke's mother in the film as well. Should have been, like, with that pedigree, I'm like, it's not my genre.
I think so. Yeah, yeah.
It's not for me. Mm-hmm. But with those people behind it, it should be a good film. It should at least be competent.
Yeah.
And it all rests on, and yeah. I want to be very careful here because yeah. I went into this film not knowing anything about it.
Yeah.
It all rests on a third act. It is a twist. But it is maybe not exactly what it is,
yeah.
But it's blatantly obvious
all right.
the whole way through the film that something is wrong.
All right.
When it's eventually revealed
yeah.
what that wrong thing is,
yeah. you disagree
with
that.
And you know. The premise of the film, which I've already stated, I won't restate because that will make it really obvious.
Okay.
You will slap your forehead, not because it's so clever, but because someone thought this was a good fucking idea. Some studio went, oh, yeah.
All right. Let me, this is my view, my personal take on rom-coms in general, okay? The rom-com balances on two things. One is the meet cute, all right? The meet cute needs to be fucking adorable, all right? Or interesting or something. Right? So between the two characters, that happens. Was it on this one? Was it interesting? You didn't care. Okay, fine.
Look,
I didn't expect
unlike
you to care,
dogs, you can look up. That's all I will say.
Okay. Well,
that's a Shaun of the Dead reference. That.
All right, fair enough. And then the second thing is, you have to double blind the audience when it comes to the resolution because all rom-coms in the same fucking way. He gets her. Occasionally you get a, oh, I
learned
something.
Maybe you'll appreciate this more.
All right.
That's all I'll say.
Yeah, so what happens is they have to flip that somehow, but they still give it to you. All right? So those two things are good. Generally, it's a good movie, but...
Look, now's the time to watch it.
Yeah?
Right? This will be out...
Christmas.
December 22nd or whatever this episode will be out.
All right.
Watch it now. Once Christmas has gone by the end of Boxing Day, you got to wait till next year.
Do you think there's anything with the whole Asian dude, white woman thing that I would love? I would love that just as a guy who supports that for my own life.
Who cares?
So yeah, okay, sure. All right.
She's not particularly attractive in this film. I deliberately kind of tried to...
Dumbed her down?
Well, Stella is a bit of hard living. You know, she's had a significant health scare and...
Oh, okay.
She wears pretty much the same clothes the entire film, which is really unattractive when you start to think about that for a length of time.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
I will say probably the best part of the film, Michelle Yeoh...
Really?
Is her boss.
Ah, Crouching Tiger.
Playing a... fairly stereotypical kind of
country boss
tiger lady,
okay,
but with a heart of gold. So
all right, I'll check that out.
Yeah, their banter was closest to the funniest thing in the film.
Okay.
Certainly, the back and forth between Amelia Clarke and Henry Golding, not funny. And Emma Thompson's attempts to be a funny Eastern European mother, are so not money. It's scary.
Now I'm going to watch it just to see how this plays off between you and me. Okay.
This will be like my songbird for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair to say.
Okay.
Nice one. My number 8 is Buddy Games, so we're back to you. That's where it went.
Yeah. All right. My number... That was my number 8, so my number 7 is the film which, if you listen to our bonus episode, which I had Gerald from 2Ps on a podcast on to countdown our top 5 horror films of 2020. Yes. Obviously, been affected by COVID, so they're not the same amount... Not the same quality of horror films has come out, so I just wanted to sort of shout out the the ones that are worth your watch. He said this is his number one.
As in his favorite.
His favorite horror film
of the year. But clearly not yours.
It's called The Beach House.
The Beach House. What's it about?
It's directed by Jeffrey A. Brown. And it's basically about two troubled college sweethearts go away to the guy's dad's beach house on the coast somewhere.
All right.
Run into a couple of unexpected guests and things go south.
Okay. So gore aplenty? Hacky hacky?
No.
Just scary?
No.
Not scary?
No.
Wants to be scary? Wasn't?
Wildly disappointed.
Fails at being scary?
Very boring.
Got it.
Hence number seven, Gerald, mate. I do not know what drugs you're on when you watch this film. It is at best mediocre and at worst a wild disappointment. And maybe it didn't help that you said it was your favorite film of the year.
Now, that's definitely going to figure in. But Gerald is something of a horror aficionado, much like a good self.
Likewise.
So,
I was interesting. Bored.
This is a fan fight, people.
This could have been, the last half an hour could have been great. And had it not been such a low budget, it would have had some legs, I think.
Yeah.
But I didn't give a shit about any character in this film.
What's it called?
The Beach House.
The Beach House.
Yeah, it's. I'm struggling to give it 2 stars.
Okay.
Put it that way.
Avoid the beach house, go straight to the river.
Yes.
All good.
That'll do about that one. Let's move straight on to your number seven, sir.
Cool. My number seven is something that a lot of people have been chatty about on the interwebs. Mm-hmm. It's a Netflix doco called The Social Dilemma.
Okay. Mm. Right. That's low. I've heard people say good things.
Yeah. No, I don't. You know what? The only reason it's low, it is a good show, and I believe everyone should watch this because it does. I kind of live in this world and digital marketing and stuff like that, so it actually didn't tell me anything I didn't already know. However, it's probably just the thing that I took from it. It's about basically how social media and algorithms and data management and so on is not ruining, but taking over everyone's life because everyone has a profile on you. They know what you like. They know how you behave. They use it to make you buy things, do things, you know, as a population, not you generally, but people like you and whatever. So it's good to actually know what they're doing because it's then allowing you to make more informed decisions. But it is quite startling how much this has become. They've commoditized humanity, kind of. They've commoditized the way you think, the way you work, the way you act, right. All those sorts of shit. So it's a little bit, you know how
conspiracy
it's...
Conspiracy theorist.
It is, and that's fine. It is trying to lead you a certain way, definitely. And
as a point of view, it wants to support.
Absolutely. Yep. So, but be aware of it still. The things that it says, you should know. Okay. So yeah.
But that seems quite low, seven. Like, Honest Thief is above this.
See, what's above this one?
Honest Thief!
Yeah. No, it is. You know, Honest Thief is... I enjoyed that more than this. Absolutely.
Holy shit.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll never
this
bother.
Is a useful film, but I had a better time with Honest Thief.
I'll never bother with this piece of shit.
You should, actually.
My number six is another film which I posited as potentially a reviewable worthy one on the podcast. I watched it during this week. It doesn't have good pedigree, I will give it that. It's directed by Rick Roman War, who did the last two Whatever Has Fallen films.
Oh, fuck.
London Has Fallen and
fuck!
Angel Has Fallen. And it also stars Jared Butler.
Fuck.
It's called Greenland.
Oh, well, it's I heard about this one. What is it?
Disaster porn. You did hear about it. Well, I'm glad that those synapses are firing your brain. Because we talked about reviewing it, and it was coming out of the theater. And then it never came out of the theater. And so we had to change our plans.
What was it about?
It's basically about a world-ending asteroid cluster, the comet, with asteroids in it.
You
in
like
its
that
wake.
Shit. You like that disaster porn.
I am a bit of a disaster porn aficionado. It's kind of like 2012 made serious.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait, was 2012 not serious?
God, no. Do you remember that film?
It was supposed to be.
I mean, the world ends, but
it's still asking you to take it seriously.
No.
Surely.
No, some of those action sequences where cars jump across onto arcs. Arcs, Wayne, they built arcs in that film. It's not serious.
I've forgotten this. I've forgotten the whole thing. All right, was John Cusack in it?
Yes. Woody Harrelson. He was like the conspiracy dude, dies at the end of the first act.
I'm confusing it with Deep Impact.
Impact. Yep, this is more akin to Deep Impact. Okay. If you want to pick the most tonally consistent film.
So
Deep
Jerry's
Impact.
Doing a bit of drama, sort of.
Yeah. And it's very intimate.
All right. That's good.
This one follows Jared Butler's everyman.
All right.
And his hot, hot wife, played by Marina Baccarin.
Oh, what?
Yeah, which is straight away the most unrealistic part about the film.
Maybe 10 years ago, Jerry, but not now.
They're estranged and,
they're estranged, okay.
For reasons that you find out through the course of the film. They have a son who's the diabetic. And anyway, he is an architect and builds skyscrapers.
Mm.
And how this differs from other end-of-the-world films is he is specifically targeted by the government saying, he gets a message on his phone saying, come to this airbase, pack one bag, bring your family, no one else is allowed, at the same time as I know this comet's going to pass very close to Earth. It's going to create the biggest sky show in the world. Turns out the world's been lied to by the governments to keep order.
Mm.
It's actually going to hit.
Fuck.
Yeah, and it's a world end, elements of our world ending amount. But the best chance for survival is to make it to these bases that were built at the heart of the Cold War in the underground of Greenland, way up north, away from the worst of the strikes. And so they're summoning all the people that will be able to, or the most likely to be able to rebuild humanity and the world after this, including a structural engineer slash architect. Yep. It then follows their attempts to get on that plane and how it all goes south. And it just really sticks to them and their family. But there's some quite, the first half of this film, the first 40 minutes, really good.
Yeah?
Really good. Like I'm like, oh, holy shit. Like this only dropped the other day, like literally a couple of days ago on video on demand. I'm like, this is a hidden sleeper. This could be one. This could be a top 10 film.
40 minutes. That's half the show, basically.
I'm like, wow, this is really well put together. I won't spoil why, but there's a couple of really powerful scenes in there. And then it takes some. The longer this film goes, the less effective it becomes.
Isn't that a shame? Isn't that a shame when that happens?
Yeah, it kind of peaks very early, and then drops away. There's
did you lose interest?
No, but there was a couple of baffling character choices that don't make any sense at all, and you just fuck off. Come on now, it just takes you right out of the film, including it's got the dude from The Office, so Pam's first fiance in the show,
Jim. No.
No, the first.
Oh, the first guy, yeah.
Yeah, the guy, Roy, I think his name is in the show.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that bloke's been typecast, so the moment that he appears on screen, he's not a good bloke. Uh-huh, and you know he's not a good bloke, and his reasoning. It's just like, oh, my God, why? And it just feels very laboured, the script.
How's Jerry?
Oh, he's okay. To be honest, he's a bit, he works now as an everyman because he looks like an everyman.
He looks like, absolutely.
Yeah, he's overweight like an everyman.
Yes.
Everyman.
Everyman.
And... just doesn't follow that his wife's at all interested in letting him in anymore, given what he's done in the film. But anyway.
Okay. Greenland. There you go. My number six is another documentary, which I actually do kind of recommend. And it's called Minimalism.
Yeah, I'm probably at the kind of recommend on Greenland. Like if that
you know what?
End of the world thing in 2020 doesn't put you off, it's worth watching.
I'm so, non-linear. Like, things that are higher up my list, I liked them more and I wouldn't necessarily recommend them.
Oh, for God's sake,
I know, motherfucker. It works like this show. It works like that, man. Anyway, Minimalism documentary is basically a doco with these two guys and they wrote this book and they have this website and it's basically them exploring how might your life be better with less things, okay? And so it takes a look at the inside the lives of minimalists from all walks of life, like families, entrepreneurs, architects, artists, journalists, scientists, all these people who actually get rid of most of their stuff and actually live on just a few things. And that cleans up and kind of, I don't know, it sort of clarifies the purpose of your life.
I have a very, very big problem with this whole concept.
Please, go on.
The very big problem is, tends to be only people who've got lots that can afford to go down.
Now, they do mention this in the film, and they go, look, it's just families, you know, people who actually don't have that much money. And they actually, but and I think the big thing is, though, yeah, you're right. You're saying that rich people who had heaps of stuff have the opportunity of getting rid of heaps of stuff.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Whereas it's like, yeah.
Whereas you've never had it or you can't get it.
Exactly. It's like, off. You want to grab it. Exactly that. No. I think it does sort of address that. The issue that it's probably more with this one is that the two guys, one guy's like, I'm a hugger, man. Anytime I meet someone, just grabs them. And I'm like, it's just.
Fucking California.
I know. So it's, I think it's still worth watching. And if it makes you if it makes you sort of at all examine your life, then it's worth taking up that residence in your mind.
Give you some critical reflection.
Yeah, it does not give you an actual path as to how to become minimalist, which is probably, I don't know if it's good or it's bad, but if you were interested in the concept, you would then have to go research how to become a minimalist. But it's a nice idea. So yeah, worthwhile.
Okay. My number five might be on the list. I don't know. I went and saw it at the theater. And again, we talked about doing a major review on it, which clearly has guided my list this week.
Yeah.
But we never quite got around to it. It's Let Him Go.
Oh, I got that on my list.
Yeah, okay. So it's higher up. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
No, I like this show.
I think this film's fine.
Yeah.
And I did not have a bad time with it. It's a 3-star material for me. I don't think it quite succeeds at what it's wanting to do.
Really?
In a number of different ways. But bottom line, worth a watch.
Solid.
Solid. That's a good word.
Absolutely solid.
Very solid. Three stars for me is solid. Three and a half stars for me is good. 4 stars is very good, and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
so
I'll tell you about it. But Kevin Costner is a retired sheriff, and he lives out in Montana or somewhere near his son and his wife and boy. Sadly, the son dies in a horse-related accident, and the bookish wife.
First scene of the film.
First scene in the film. So his wife, who's like a sort of bookish, very quiet girl, She remarries into a dangerous, horrible family, and she brings her son, their grandchild, with them, and they live off the grid in Dallas, and they control the town, and they're all like gangster-ass motherfuckers, and they fuck people up and shit. So he and his wife leave their Montana ranch to rescue their young grandson from the clutches of this dangerous family. Burn Notice is in this, too. And shit,
Jeremy Donovan.
Yeah, Jeremy Donovan. And shit goes Jeffrey Donovan, yeah. So I liked it a lot more than this, but I'll tell you this, because it's good. It does have a bit of a meandering pace.
That's the problem with the film.
That's the problem
with
it?
It's languid.
Yes.
Very, very languid. It takes, you have a lot of patience for this film. And that's okay, because I was enjoying back in the cinema, which I saw this.
That's cool.
2 hours for me. I had my popcorn. Mm-hmm. I had my, I think I saw it in gold class, and I had my
had some lube.
Sunday coming halfway through. So it was beautiful.
Good mood. Good
very
mood.
Few people movie. In the cinema. Loved my time with this film. And I just really soaked it up and enjoyed it. And I think the real strength of the film is the performances. I think in particular, I think Diane Lane really stands out in this film.
Yeah, you know you don't fuck with her, but she's a nice lady.
She just, yeah. And I didn't, it's funny, the first 20 minutes of the film, I didn't realize, not 20 minutes, exaggeration, 5 minutes of the film, I didn't realize it was set back in the 60s.
What? Is it set back in the 60s? I thought it was present day and they were all just cowboy people who would just dress old shit. Is it set in the 60s?
Yes.
Didn't they have phones?
No. Half this film would have been solved. They did have phones.
Oh my God, yeah. Why didn't she call them?
This is maybe the best moment in 299 episodes of this show.
I don't think I remember thinking that actively. I might have known it subconsciously, but it doesn't... I don't recall it being a period film.
I'm just going to go to Wikipedia now and 100% confirm, because it'll be even funnier if it's back on me.
If you thought it must be, I imagine I'm the one who fucked up.
It's based on a 2013 novel in 1963 Montana.
I just thought all old people looked the same.
They were dressed in a funny way. They had antique radios. Like that.
Maybe he likes to hang onto his car. I don't know. I didn't even think about that at all.
All the cars.
You know what? Only now that I think about it. The styling. It was the same. Because the young people were dressed in like hawks as well. Okay. Okay, great. No, that's good. That's good.
Now, the film just went up. Is it your number one?
My number two.
It should be your number one now.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you this, though, right? Apart from the fact that I didn't know shit about time. I have no child, but I wouldn't say I'm devoid of paternal sort of instincts.
Sure.
When I see that boy, like, getting beat on a little bit by the guy and the way they talk to him, right? I got fucking angry. And even that bit where Diane Lane's talking to the boy and she's like, he only needed to have his burger or something. And he's like, it had mustard. And she's like, it had mustard? You don't like mustard. Like, this, you know? And I was like, fuck, I want to kill everyone. So it became stressful for me. And then,
that affected you.
Very much so. But unfortunately, it depressed the shit out of me afterwards, right? And I'm like, I'm not used to being depressed, everyone. So I'm like, oh, fuck. What now? I had to go watch a rom-com.
Number two on your list, number five of mine. I'll tell you why it's number five of mine.
Yeah.
Other than its languid pacing, it could have been, some people criticize it for going to sort of generic thriller territory in the last half.
Nah,
of the
I needed
I think,
that.
I think that elevated the film.
I personally. Think the reason it was on purposely slow, to start with, is so that when the frantic sort of end of it hit you harder.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it was worth going through the slowness. So,
no,
yeah.
It was for me. Yeah. But I will say this.
Look, it was good.
There was a very, very clumsy attempt in the second act, which completely clued me into how the film was going to end. I'm like, why not have a fucking sign above the characters' heads? Dead, 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 live.
Okay.
I was so annoyed by that. I'm like, oh. Fuck.
You know what? This is the other problematic. I saw that, and I know when it was foreshadowed, I was
the
like,
foreshadowing was it wasn't shadowing anymore. It was like there was a whole fucking stark contrast of that character there and their fate. I mean, very clear.
I didn't pick it up. I did not pick it up at all. I know what you're talking about. I can't. I was like, and then when it happened, I was like, oh, of course. Now, when the payoff came, I was like, oh, I understand. But I didn't pick it coming. Mind you, I tend to not think. Me. Really?
Yeah.
I liked it, man. I liked that.
You've got to be a little subtle.
It's not subtle. It's not subtle, right? But it's shrewdly made, and it's gripping. I thought it was gripping.
And I want to give a big shout out to Leslie Manville as the matriarch of the family.
Yeah,
they're up against. Yeah. She was really good, very threatening, very menacing in her delivery.
Oh no, I was scared of her. And you know what? In this is Searchers style plot. I find it very enjoyable to watch the old
Searchers couple. Set in the '50s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Just okay. Making sure.
Just saying. Now that I know it's an old movie, but it's I'm watching the old Kevin Costner and Diane Lane being old couple together. I like watching that shit if it works, because you obviously had enough of each other's shit, but they still love each other.
Yeah,
so it's good.
No, they were good. Again, Costner was good. Just I think the
Costner great
film outshone him.
You watched Yellowstone?
No.
She had, it's I like the first.
Very similar character?
But young. Like playing his... but it was present day, sorry. So yes.
Yes, okay.
Similar character, not as powerful, but sorry, way more powerful in Yellowstone. But okay. Worthwhile.
All right.
Okay.
So that's my... that was my five.
And my five is Honest Thief. I'm telling you, man, it's fucking fine. It's fucking fine, everyone. All good with that shit.
You watch that film too many times, it will destroy your world. Oh, it will eat it away.
Whatever.
My number four is a Russian horror film. I don't think we've had any horror films on my list so far. I'm about to correct that shit. It's directed by Igor Abramenko.
That guy.
Yeah, it's called Sputnik.
Sputnik. What is this Sputnik about?
Sputnik is about two Russian cosmonauts back in at the height of the Cold War, so I think in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. They go up and they're coming back down when something lands on their spacecraft, and we cut to basically a fairly hot female doctor is approached by the military to come to a secluded base where one of the cosmonauts has survived and to investigate him. Turns out he has hitched a passenger. An alien has basically gotten into him, is using mm-hmm. him as a parasite.
Host.
Yeah, as a host. But the alien comes out at night.
And goes back in.
And then goes back in.
Ooh.
And when it goes out at night, it has to kill.
Now, what does the alien look like when it's outside?
It's okay. Look, this is a Russian film. You don't expect... No. I don't expect much. I don't expect Hollywood level. But I have to say, I was intrigued by this movie. Like, I was on board for it. It's not short. It's 113 minutes. Could use a 10 or 15 minute cut.
Yeah, a bit long,
It's a little bit long. But it's fast paced, then let him go. So
okay.
This film worked for me.
Really?
I enjoyed it. It's not fantastic. It's also pretty predictable, but not, again, like Let Him Go. I really, really dug the score. It goes for the gore in a couple of places whilst being strategic in that. Doesn't go over the top.
Reserved some ways.
Yeah.
So that's like, good. That's good. All right. That's
well worth a look if you're into sort of horror sci-fi. Mm. There was a film made a couple of years ago called Morgan. Very similar kind of film, but this is a superior version thereof, which should be because it came afterwards. I suspect someone watched Morgan and then came back to this
one. Okay, and the name again?
Sputnik.
Sputnik. Yep. Got it. All right. My number four, everyone, is a Daniel Radcliffe film that I saw on the Netflixes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called The F Word, although in some countries it's called What If.
I don't never heard of it.
Yeah, I know. I hadn't either. Let me tell you what happened with this end of my list here. You're going to see shit that I was just scrolling through Netflix going, what's that? And just finding shit that has happened with named actors in it that I've never heard of because we live in an age where there's so much content that I don't hear about shit that was high budge. All right?
Said the man who does a film and TV podcast.
I know! And I'm the guy looking for it. So anyway, Daniel Radcliffe, Rafe Spall, Adam Driver, and Zoe Kazan, who I don't know. But it's basically about this med school dropout, Daniel Radcliffe. It's a rom-com, people, all right? This is the one I watched after fucking Let Him Go because I had to feel better about myself. this guy has had a string of failed relationships. He forms an instant bond with the female character. She lives with her longtime boyfriend, Rafe Spall, and together they puzzle out. Basically, they become friends, but they definitely want to fuck each other. But the whole play through the movie is how they almost do and they don't, and they never really quite talk about it. And the movie, this is one of those things. I liked this movie. I would never recommend it to Paul.
I was already decided. I've never watched this.
And I barely recommend it to, I don't know, I'll recommend it to most girls. But it's a rom-com, but it's more of a drama and an example of how Daniel Radcliffe is making interesting choices. Now,
sure.
The rom-com itself, don't get me wrong, it ends every way that you think a rom-com does, all right? But there is enough laughs and good shit in it to make it just an enjoyable watch. For example, Adam Driver has this scene where he's like banging his woman and then he comes out, sits in the kitchen with Daniel Radcliffe and he's preparing something and he goes, I just had sex and now I'm going to eat nachos! And he says, this is the best day of my life. Trust me, it worked. It worked fine.
How would you like to suck my balls?
Paul, just because you don't know funny, motherfucker, I'm just saying. We pulled down, man. Bullshit. Anyway.
I'm surprised that Adam Driver's slumming it. What year was this film?
2013.
Oh, okay.
Long time ago. Long time ago.
Makes perfect sense.
But, you know, I found this a charming little romp, okay? I couldn't stop watching. There you go.
What year was it set in?
The 19 fuck yous.
Fair enough. All right, my number three is also a Netflix film. It debuted to a little bit of fanfare in the genre circles. It's from first-time director Remy Weeks. I want to say first-time director. Yes. It's called His House.
His House?
It's a 2020 horror film which follows a couple from South Sudan who escaped from the war-torn sort of...
Okay.
They move to London and set up a new life. And This film operates as both a horror film and a social commentary.
Mm-hmm. We're doing that, aren't we?
Pretty good.
Pretty good?
It's the ending, I have to say, is a little underwhelming, but this film legitimately has two or three scenes that are frightening.
English film?
Yes. Yep. I mean, yeah, where they speak to each other in Sudanese, it has subtitles.
Yep.
But otherwise, it's...
No, sorry, only British film, sorry.
Well, I don't know what nationality Remy Weeks is.
But it's set in London, yeah.
But it's, yeah, set in London, but it stars these Sudanese... Well, I don't know where they're from. I can't honestly say where the cast is from, but they are two...
Africa-ish.
Yeah, African actors, Sophie Durizu and Wumi Mosaku. And
excellent. We haven't heard you pronounce someone's name in a while.
They were both 100% fucking accurate. And Matt Smith is the next big actor, Doctor Who.
Oh, Doctor Who, yeah.
In a small role.
Oh, okay. All
but right. Basically, it's just these two. The majority of the film is just these two with some really good visuals. And I have to say, like I said, some genuine scares in a couple of scenes. Well put together for a first-time director.
High praise coming from you. Is it gory?
No.
No. All right, so scary.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a ghosty film.
Is horror movie and scary movie synonymous?
Yes.
It is, right? Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't want to sing the praises too much. I'm not. For me, it's a high 3 stars.
Mm-hmm.
That's this list, unfortunately, this week.
Cool. Name again?
I don't have any film that makes 4 stars. It's called His House.
His House. Yeah. Okay.
Nice and that one. Name makes sense by the end of the film.
All right.
It's not what you would think when you first start watching it.
So, sorry, what was your rough rating on this?
It's a high 3 star, low 3.5 star. Okay. So right. It's called 64, 5, 6. Yeah,
that's fine. There's a few there. Yeah, that's basically my list.
Yeah, it's a recommend if you're a horror film fan.
Word. My number 3 is also a movie I never heard of, but the people in it, Sean Penn, Idris Elba, Ray fucking Winston. And Mark Rylance. And it's called The Gunman. It's 2015. It was
Jesus.
On. I know, dude.
What
I know.
Is this shit?
I just check it out, okay? It's about Sean Penn plays this black ops dude, right? 8 years after fleeing the Congo.
No, I have seen this movie.
Have you?
Yeah, it's called The Gunman, is it?
The Gunman, yeah. And he's fleeing the Congo after some assassination that he does.
All right.
Yeah, well, here's what it was. I remember I walk in knowing nothing about this movie. I just turned it on. That's all. I saw he had a gun in the opening title card. That's it, right? He then starts off with from PTSD, and he's digging wells to atone from his bad past. But an attempt is made on his life. He flees to London, finds out who wants him dead. It's that kind of thriller where he's moving around the world. He's got a love affair, which doesn't work out. He had to leave her because he's a black ops guy and he has to just disappear. And Javier Bardem, is also in it. And I'm looking online, by the way, everyone hates this movie.
That was all right.
It's got a 16 on Rotten Tomatoes, right?
Whoa, that's low.
It's fucking low, right? And I was watching going, you know what? This is fine. This is like it's your military black ops thriller action thing.
I would suspect that if you saw that cast
and
you're
a bit
expecting
more,
whereas you've come to it 5 years after the fact and no one gives a shit.
A good call, but I mean, most critics think it's nothing more than serviceable. I would say it's a step above that. I would say it's like...
Sure, again, number two. No, three. Three,
yeah. It's not like a fucking... I'm recommending this as a... if you're looking for a bit of action, it's not bad. I wasn't bored with it. I think it was... I think it's based on a novel, like some French novel or some shit. But I think Sean Penn is just... He wants a piece of Liam Neeson's action. Dangerous senior citizen action, you know? And he's fucking ripped as well. He's every fucking shit shirtless.
I'd probably back Sean Penn in a fight over Liam Neeson.
I wouldn't. Have you seen Liam Neeson's cock? He'll just throw it at him. I think Neeson is like really tall as well, so I reckon he'd probably still fuck him up.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it's all, you know, it's that. But I think he sells the action. All the people on there, I took it as a serious spy thriller. It wasn't like just an action movie. It's more like
definitely
the assignment
more
type thing. Yeah, so there you go. The Gunman.
That was a deep cut, The Assignment.
The Assignment like with Aiden Quinn. Yeah, that's a fucking great movie, by the way.
Holy shit.
That's, yeah. Isn't that great?
Okay, my number two is called Possessor.
And Possessor.
It comes from David Cronenberg's son.
Uh-oh. wait a minute.
This is not a recommend for you, Wayne.
Okay.
From Brandon Cronenberg. And it's not his first film,
but
it's the first film that has made a splash, if I can put it that way.
What is it?
It's it basically follows... this female operative, so it's a kind of spy
thriller-esque.
But in this film, you can take over the body of a mark.
Right? Oh, so somewhat spy, sci-thri.
Yeah,
sci-fi.
Yeah, I get go thrive.
Sci-spy thriller. Yeah. Oh, there you go.
And
sci-spy. That's a whole new fucking genre. Sorry, go on.
I think Tenet may have got there first.
Sci-spy. Yeah, we got. Yeah, fuck it. Anyway, sorry. Please go.
And anyway, she's played by Andrea Riceborough. So from Mandy, don't know if you watched that one.
Oh, that Nicolas Cage
shit?
No.
She's in Birdman, Nocturnal Animals as well. Oblivion.
Oh, I know the. I know her.
She's a strange looking person. I will say that much about her.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Christopher Abbott, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Sean Bean, Tuppence Middleton from Mank.
Wow.
Is in the film as well.
It's a big cast.
And anyway, yeah, it's. It's hard to describe, but basically, Jennifer Jason Leigh is kind of her handler, sending her off to do these, to murder people. So she's just an assassin.
Yeah. This sounds kind of cool.
Well worth a watch.
Sorry, the name again?
Possessor.
Possessor. I've never fucking heard of this.
For obvious reasons, because you possess someone.
Yeah, I guess so.
And Christopher Abbott's character is the main mark after the film is set up, and she goes into his body, taking over.
How do they control?
Yeah, you gotta watch.
Okay,
watch the film. It's part of the charm. It's extremely violent. In
oh,
places.
Really?
Yeah, it does not skimp on the gore at all. So prepare yourselves going in, like, you know, knives into necks. None of this whole long distance wide shot.
Shit, yeah.
No blood. It's like knife going in slow and whatever else.
Ugh, really?
Yeah. So it's designed to make you uncomfortable. It's designed to emulate her fractured psyche. Because she's got a family and whatever else at home, and how the two eventually come together, how she's trying to come to terms with these horrendous things that she does, and then comes back to her normal kind of life. So it's a new spin on an old tale, if I can put it that way.
And is that Jennifer Jason Leigh you're talking about?
She's the boss.
She's the boss. Yep. So she's not the one doing it.
No, that's Andrew Riceborough.
Okay, cool. Yep. Very nice. All right,
I referenced him earlier. Gerald from Two Beers on a Podcast is pretty much fellating this film wherever he can.
Oh, wait, so he likes it too?
He loves it.
Possessor.
Yeah, I think it's good.
You know what the name of this genre should be?
What?
It's spy-fi. That's what it is. That's what it's spy-fi. Oh, I'm happy with that. Let's coin that.
Yep.
All right. Okay, cool. Nice one.
Your line number two.
Two is Let Him Go, bro.
All right. So let's run it back through again and mark the moment where we recommend. My number 10 is Buddy Games. 9, Honest Fucking Thief. Honest Nothing Thief.
Honestly, great.
Can't even bother reaching for the soundboard. I'm so angry right now.
It was okay before, but now that I know you hate it, it's great.
8, Last Christmas. 7, The Beach House. 6, Greenland. That's about where I would say get into it if you want to.
So you do recommend Green Flaps? A little?
Minorly.
Minorly.
Like, okay. You have to like disaster films. Don't bother otherwise.
God.
5, here's where I do hard recommend. Let Him Go. 6, sorry, 4, Sputnik. 3, His House. 2, Possessor. And my number 1... by a long shot, the only 3.5-star film. Could have been 4-star, but I did watch it. Not a great mood. It's called Love and Monsters.
I think I heard of this. What is it?
Directed by Michael Matthews. It stars Dylan Clark.
Don't know.
No, not Dylan Clark. Dylan O'Brien from, do you remember that American Assassin film?
Yeah. Oh, that motherfucker. Yeah.
Jessica Henwick. Michael Rooker.
Yeah.
And it's just this film, which is basically monsters through machinations of the film, which is in a very effective opening sequence, which is animated.
Okay.
Take over the world.
All right.
And so we're in like Walking Dead territory, but it's monsters.
Monsters.
Rather than...
Now, what kind of monsters?
Well, they've kind of transformed, metamorphosized from...
Realistic Cthulhu looking shits or...
No, it's more like a crab becomes a big, huge crab monster. A frog becomes a frog monster.
Oh, okay, good.
So it's like animals have just mutated into these things, and ants are like, you know, these mandibles that will cut you in half type stuff. But it's not gory. It's PG-13.
All right.
So the gore's all handled off camera, if I can put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
People do die, but not as many as you might think.
Enough for Paul. Yep.
And it's a first-person perspective. It follows him all the way through with his voiceover kind of giving a narrative through the course of the film. But it's okay because he's not just saying what he's doing. It adds to the scene rather than just explains what's going on in the scene.
So it works.
And it's fun. It's basically he decides that he wants to go after his girlfriend that he knows is in a community however many miles away, 120 miles away. Well, I say his girlfriend, his ex-girlfriend from 5 years before or 7 years before, mm-hmm. which is when this film takes place after the monster apocalypse. And no one's ever survived that journey. And he decides, screw it, because my life here is so miserable, I'm going for it.
But PG. Huh.
He runs into Michael Rooker and a little girl along the way. It was fun. It would have been, the special effects aren't top notch, but I suspect this would have done all right at the theater had it been released, which I think was its intention. It's a real shame because it does leave it wide open, this world, for sequels. It's not going to make that money in a pandemic, unfortunately. So well worth your time. Good fun film, Love and Monsters.
Love and Monsters, nice one. Okay, cool. My 10 to 1 is 10, Jujutsu. 9, Songbird. 8, Buddy Games. 7, The Social Dilemma. 6, Minimalism, a documentary. 5, Honest Thief. Yeah, man. 4, the F word. 3, The Gunman. 2, Let Him Go. And my number 1 was a real unexpected thing. I saw this advertised on Celestial Normal TV, right?
Honto?
Yeah, it's actually a Chris Rock movie called Top 5. Sounds kind of... I know. Again, I never heard about it, but I saw the trailer on TV, I guess. And then I'm like, what? And then I totally downloaded... I mean, I acquired it. And then it was... it's got... It's got Chris Rock, Rosario Dawson, and a shit ton of cameos from like Seinfeld and this.
What's it about?
It is about this dude. It's basically Chris Rock playing a fictionalized version kind of himself of a man who began in stand-up comedy and then he became a big-time star through this trilogy of action comedies about being a talking bear. It's odd, right? But he is then forced to spend the day with Rosario Dawson, who's a profile writer from the New York Times. And it's a very walkie-talkie type comedy, right? So it's unexpectedly he starts to open up to her and they sort of wind their way across New York, and it's sort of a rom-com, but it's got some hardcore nasty shit comedy in it, like foursome sex with fat people kind of comedy. It's a lot of...
It all starts to make sense.
No. The actual funny shit in it is hilarious. Like, he just talks about... He's doing voiceovers as well, and he mentions like his...
If you're into nasty foursome sex... Wayne's number is 555.
I'm telling you, it's a foul scene. Oh, it's that kind of nasty shit. And he talks about just funny things. Like, he was saying that, like, he met some girls at the club, then he went back to his hotel, and he had something that he calls ho sleep, which is the restless sleep that you have when a hoe might come over. I wonder, Paul, have you ever had any ho sleep?
Kiss my sweaty balls, you fat fuck.
You know, some ho sleep.
No one ever wants to come around my place. Okay.
I'm talking ever, all right? Now, we say, like, also, there's a bit... Rosario Dawson in it is quite funny. For example, she's a woman who carries hot sauce with her everywhere because she likes all of the food hot, right? And there's this one scene where she suspects her boyfriend might be gay because he always wants her to ram her finger in his ass, but he never wants actual sex.
So, Wayne, is that an accusation you've had?
No, I haven't. I don't get thumbs in my ass, man. Well, the ass jokes are just...
I bet you're the kind of guy
effect.
That would fuck a person in the
you're
ass and not even have
shit.
The goddamn
you
common courtesy to give
him
a ring.
On the planet. Anyway, fucking bitch. Anyway, they're doing this thing where they have dinner, he makes her angry, and then later on he's like, you know, he gets on all fours, presents his ass and goes, give it to me, right? And she gets mad at him, and she's pissed off. So she gets from her bag a tampon, puts hot sauce on it, and rams it up his fucking ass, right? He's like, it's that kind of humor.
That's not cool.
It's fucking hilarious. Well, it's funny. It's funny shit. But at the end, Jerry Seinfeld, Adam Sandler, Whoopi Goldberg, all these people turn up making really foul jokes. It's quite good, man. And it's a cameo by Paul's favorite rapper, DMX.
I can't imagine why this would be Wayne's number one.
It's hilarious, man. It's like it's a Woody Allen-esque sort
it's
of...
It's got backdoor action. It's got filthiness. It's got talking about shit that people don't want to hear about.
Yeah, it's great shit. It's really funny. And I'm telling you, a lot of critics actually love this show, which I didn't know until I heard of it. I know, I've never heard of it too. And Top 5 refers to their game of picking their favorite 5 hip-hop artists. But then the search here is for the authenticity of what people think. It's a good show, I'm telling you. It's well written and it's very hip-hoppy sort of, you know, black culture-y, but it's fucking great.
Nothing wrong with that at all.
No, nothing at all, but it's like...
There's plenty wrong with a tampon hot sauce up
your
ass.
Oh, that's hilarious, man. That seems funny because you don't like the guy already, so it's like, fuck that guy. You know what I mean? Like, it's, okay. It's good. It's
right,
good.
So it wasn't Chris Rock then?
No, it wasn't Chris Rock. It was a white guy.
That's all right then.
Well, it kind of is, I think.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Top 5.
Left
Give
field, cold, and wants right. Its pick back, but... It's on Netflix, that one.
No, I had to magic.
Oh, sorry,
one.
You said it quite.
I mean, yes.
Fair enough. All right, well, no one mentions, obviously, for our top 10, last 10. So let's get straight into it then. What you've been watching in recent times in our segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about.
Pop 10.
Talk about.
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Hendo Henderson from the Movie Journey podcast. He said, Tommy Boy. Get off B Dizzle's case. It's not as bad as you said. 2 stars.
Yeah.
B Dizzle being Billy from the We Watch the Thing podcast. Loves Tommy Boy way too much.
Yeah, I love that one.
Mike Margosian. Hi, old patron. Thank you, Mike, for your support of the show. Uncle Frank. Slightly heartbreaking dysfunction family story set in the 70s. Great performances and style.
Okay. Uncle Frank, not heard of that one either.
Yeah. Tony Dobbish had Sound of Metal, one of, from the Take Two podcast. One of my favorites of the year. And a couple other people mentioned that one too. It's about, a metal drummer who starts to go deaf.
Doco?
No.
No, okay.
No, fictional, sorry. Yeah, okay, yeah. So I'm kind of keen on that one. Sounds very, very good. Mina Harker, who is actually Dan. So Dan says, the opening 20 minutes of Bodyguard starring Robb Stark is the most captivating television that I have ever seen.
I would agree. The first episode was so damn good, and then it just didn't get it.
That is followed by a slow burn. First three episodes and explosive final three episodes. I don't know if I agree on the last part. Sorry, Dan. And the number two, Canadian Love Here. The Expanse season 5 just dropped on Prime. And once you get past the first few shaky episodes, it's a great sci-fi story that keeps you guessing. The
Expanse, so much content.
There is. There is indeed. Marie Holt, this is a film you talked about recently, and I'm halfway through, literally about halfway through it last night. Ava, it's a bit meh.
Yeah, look, it was.
It's not even that, to be honest. It's really bad.
I like Jess.
It's terrible. It's terrible, and if I can be bothered, I'll tell you another time why it's so terrible.
Yeah, it's a bit shit.
Stephanie Coley said, happiest season. Easy, fun watch. Mackenzie Davis is blah. Dan Levy and Aubrey Plaza are brilliant as usual. And Kristen Stewart didn't bother me this time. Heard about that one?
No, and I'm not a fan of this Aubrey Plaza girl.
It's a same-sex interest rom-com where basically one female...
Oh, I'm in.
Yeah.
What is it?
Trying desperately to avoid the word lesbian anyway. One female partner invites a female partner to come with her to her family but she hasn't come out yet.
Oh, wait, I've seen the trailer for this. Yeah. Oh, okay, cool.
Hijinks ensue. Jonathan Lamb said, Boy State reminds us of all that is bad in the world of politics and the flicker of hope that our future generations can make this world a better place. Sounds poignant. Blake Jarvis, referencing our review for the upcoming week, The Mandalorian. Thank you, Favreau and Filoni.
Hell yes.
It's a great listen up for that, folks. Andrew Watson went for the controversial this week. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, not funny.
Christmas Vacation was not the Wally World one.
Clearly not.
That one wasn't as good as the Wally World one, but yeah. Oh, yeah, who knows? The old comedies, man, they age
well. Wins a lot of best Christmas films ever, that one.
Does it?
Jay Talbot said, A Perfect Day. I've not heard this one myself. 6.8 on IMDb, though critics mostly hated it. I loved it, but had a Coen Brothers vibe to it, so if you're not a fan, should still be on SBS On Demand.
Okay, nice.
There we are. Joey DiCarlo from the So Wizard podcast, good friend to the show, said, New Mittens. At least it was short.
It really sucked.
Accurate. Accurate indeed. And then the last one here, I mentioned him earlier, Gerald Morris from the To Reason On A podcast, good friend of the show, said, Possessor, a fucking atomic bomb. So good in every possible way. There's a contrast to my review.
All right.
And that's it for this week's episode and indeed your feedback. Thank you so much if you got back to us. We do really, truly appreciate it. Wayne, next week's the big one.
Big 300. One, man. Top
300 countdowns.
Episode 300. That's what it must have been now, 5
Except,
years?
Ironically, the 300th won't be a countdown.
Yeah, that's right. No, it's a celebrity show, man. It's like, it's this is all about, what are we going to do? We're doing our old segments.
We're doing a whole bunch of old segments.
Just new contents that, like, hopefully that you folks who've been with us the whole time will recognize and hopefully like. Anyone who's new here, this is the kind of shit. I'll
give you a reason to go back and check the shit out.
Possibly, although, frankly, the show's better now. Oh. So.
Sounds better, as you would hope after 300.
Well, one would think, but who knows? Things. You know, not always.
That's next week. And then, as I said, episode 301, 302, 303 will be the best and worst of TV. The worst of films of 2020 should be a really episode, that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the best of 2020.
Probably a short one.
To wrap up our review of the shitstorm that has been 2020. But thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your patronage through that year that has been 2020.
It's been a tough year, folks. Thank you so much.
We wish you, if you are someone who celebrates, we wish you a very, very Merry Christmas and otherwise just a happy holiday season. If you've got some time off of work, which we hope you do.
Absolutely.
My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
That 2021 will be a Benny year.
Here's hoping, absolutely.
The look on Wayne's face there was, can I shit on that? It's too hard.
No, it's because everyone thinks 2021 happens and everything will go away. No, it won't. You just got to fucking write it out.
Yeah, he's hoping. Anyway, fingers crossed. We'll catch you next week. Cheers. Yeah.